You are listening to Making Bank, where we uncover the mindset and success strategies of the top 1% so you can amplify your life and your business.
Welcome to Making Bank. I am Josh Felber, where we uncover the mindset and the success strategies of the top 1% so you can amplify your life and your business today. Super honored and excited for today's guest, James P. Friel. He's an investor and business consultant who helps online entrepreneurs become effective CEOs. He works with them to create effective systems, self-managing teams, and leadership capabilities so they can turn their visions into reality without being stuck into the day-to-day operations. So excited to welcome James to Making Bank.
Hey, what's going on, Josh? Great to be here, man.
You too, dude. Well, I'm glad we got to catch up a little bit before, and totally. Great connecting and seeing you again and stuff, because it's been a good handful of years, and awesome to have you on the show today.
Yeah, no, it's awesome to be here, man.
So I guess, tell me a little bit about, because I know a lot of different stuff that you're doing, but what, I guess, kind of take us back a little bit. What got you started as an entrepreneur?
Well, I guess it sort of like depends on how far back we want to go. But I think like a lot of people, you sort of discover that you might have that bug, you know, kind of early on. For me, it was when my parents were out and I was home by myself. My neighbor came up the driveway and he was looking for my parents, knocks on the door. He's like, "Hey, are your parents home?" I was like, "No, they're not here." And I just expected him to leave. And he, you know, kind of looked around. I was like, "All right, well, what else does this guy want to talk about?" And he looks over and he's like, "Oh, I really like your swing set." And I said, "Well, do you want to buy it?" And he's like, "Really?" I was like, "Yeah." He's like, "Well, how much do you want?" I said, "Make me an offer." And so I feel like that was awesome. The first hint of becoming an entrepreneur.
Right.
But fast forward many years, I actually took a more traditional path, you know, went to college, got my BS and, you know, had a couple jobs in big companies like Symantec Software and was a global head of digital strategy for HSBC Bank. And I spent 10 years in the corporate world and I was just like, "Dude, I'm not going to spend the next 10 years in the corporate world." And so there was a great offer on the table, like the job opportunity of a lifetime. And I told them no. And I left and started my own companies. And that was about 10 years ago.
That's awesome. Yeah. And fortunately, I kind of remember you right after we connected shortly after that, I think, and everything. So what, I guess, going into it, I mean, into your business, what were some of the things initially that were some of the biggest challenges in getting it going for you?
Yeah, well, I think that, you know, for everybody, I don't think I'm super unique in this. It's trying to figure out what's my product market fit, right? Like, who is the customer that I serve? You know, what am I going to sell to them? What's the thing that's going to add value? And, you know, I think there was, you know, a level of experimentation there that, you know, everybody sort of goes through to get something that people want to buy, right? Because
right.
I think everybody has value to add, but it's like, how do you match up that value with what people want and that you can make profit on? And so I think that was definitely something at the beginning that I sort of anticipated, but it's once you're in the middle of it, you're like, "Oh my gosh, like, now this is real."
Right.
And I actually have to make this happen. But it was funny because beyond that, you know, I've really always loved sales. You know, obviously I sold that swing set when I was a kid, but so the sales side of things sort of came pretty easy and, you know, things started moving, but it was the unanticipated problems as a result of those sales. It's like, "Oh, we've got, you know, customers, we've got, you know, people to manage now. We've got all these different things." And really all I wanted to do was go out and keep selling more stuff, but I was being held back because there was all this like stuff inside that was, you know, that needed to be done. And I felt like I was wearing, you know, 9 different hats and I was working 80 hours a week. And, you know, I was just like, "Dude, like this, I don't think this is what I signed up for." Right.
Right.
So I think that was a pretty big challenge as well.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I mean, that hits the nail on the head. I mean, you know, especially, you know, when you're starting, you're doing like everything and it's, yeah, you know, and then as you start to grow, you get pulled away from what you love doing, what that best thing that fits you, because you're still doing everything, but more of it.
Totally.
Overall. What were some of the things that, how did you fix or tweak or resolve those so you could get back to doing, you know, the selling and some of the top things that you love doing?
Yeah. Well, you know, at first I think I did what a lot of people do, which is you're overwhelmed and you're stretched thin. You're like, let me just hire some people. And, you know, and it was weird too, because in my corporate job, I did manage a pretty big team, like all over the world.
Right.
So I was like, you know, probably a little bit arrogant about how easy or hard that would be. And I was like, okay, well, I just like have a revolving door now. And I've got, you know, people coming in and they're leaving, or they're coming in and they suck and I'm firing them and just trying to figure these things out. And one of the things that really helped me was taking a step back and saying, okay, I know that, you know, great businesses need to have systems in place, right? You need to build systems that replace yourself. And I think
right.
I had been thinking about replacing myself with other people as opposed to replacing myself with systems. And so I started going down this train of thought and I said, well, what is a system? You know, cause I think everybody has a different definition. Like some people are like, oh, it's a, you know, software tool, or it's
right.
You know, this or that. And what I came to that was super helpful was a definition of a system is actually the combination of people and processes and tools. And if you're implementing people who have processes and they have tools that are supporting them, the odds of you being able to free yourself from whatever that thing is that you were stuck doing dramatically increases. And so I think that distinction that I sort of created, that definition of a system, was extremely helpful.
Yeah, and I think that's a huge differentiator. I mean, yeah, you can hire people and be like, all right, go do this, but they may or may not get it, and then you don't even know if they're doing it right.
Yeah,
and everything. And so having those systems in place will help. I mean, was like kind of the systems and processes something that you took from like your previous experience, or is that something like, all right, you know, I got an engineering background, I can figure this out
yeah.
and kind of like map it all out and go from there.
Yeah. It was way more of that. It was like, okay, like I'm going to pretend I'm back in engineering school. Like what would I do to architect a solution to this problem? And it's funny too, because in hindsight, it's like, well, why didn't I just do that to begin with? But I think when you're in the throes of, you know, working 80 hours a week and feeling overwhelmed and all this pressure and everything, you don't really feel like you have a moment to step back and like work on the business, which is a whole other topic, because everybody tells you work on the business, but I don't think anybody really tells you how to work on the business. And, you know, so there's other things that I do now to help with that. But yeah, it was really more of like an engineering problem at that point and saying, all right, how am I going to engineer my way out of this?
So I guess, how did you first start going about, or, you know, or maybe let's go with, you know, what are some of those top tips in kind of getting those processes together, or what was that first step?
You know, it's funny because I had never necessarily anticipated helping people with this part of their business. Like I was
right.
running a marketing agency, right? And I only created systems because I wanted to go out and get more clients and grow the marketing agency.
Sure.
But then people started seeing what I was doing and said, hey, hey, guess what? I've got chaos over here too. Can you help me out? And so I started helping people. And so over like, I guess really like the last 6 or 7 years, which is crazy because it was about that time that I met you,
mm-hmm.
you know, I've refined the way of thinking about it. And I think the thing that's been really helpful for me sharing this with other people is you got to start at a high level in the way that you look at your business, because if you're not clear what you should be focusing on, like you could be building systems in the completely wrong area of your business. Like it doesn't matter whether you have systems. It matters, like, are you doing the right thing at the right time to get the result that you want? And so the way that I look at it now is your business has 5 pillars. There's marketing, which is, you know, attracting attention and getting people to raise their hands and say that they're interested. There's sales, which is, you know, when people have a transaction,
right?
Hey, we want to work together. Delivery, you know, giving people the thing that they paid you money for. operations, which is sort of the glue that keeps everything running together, and then finance, which is obviously a super important component of the business. And then you take a look at those five and you rate yourself in each one of those five. Am I red, yellow, or green in each one of these? Right. And so if you're beginning, you might be all red. And so your game plan is going to be different than somebody who's got, you know, green on marketing and green on sales, but red on delivery and operations. And so we can kind of create this roadmap in a really quick and simple way. And then you say, okay, great. Well, if we're, you know, green on marketing and green on sales, but red on delivery and operations, we know that we need to fix those things, because if we don't, there's going to continue to be this imbalance of the better our marketing and sales do, the more our infrastructure is going to feel stressed. And it's going to be like, you know, not able to support the success that we're having on the front end of the business. And so I think an evaluation of where you are right now is absolutely step one, so that's like the working on the business stuff. And then you can say, great, knowing that, where do we want to put in systems that are going to help us get from red to yellow or from yellow to green? And you kind of diagnose it in that way. And then you say, great, well, if a system is people, process, or tools,
right,
in this area, what do we need? Do we need a person? Do we need better process? Do we need better tools? And so you kind of break things down into these components. It becomes much, much easier to manage.
Yeah, no, that sounds like super simple. Like from a mind, like, you're okay, it doesn't sound complicated. Obviously, there's parts and pieces to it all and all that. But, you know, looking at it as, okay, you know, these are the areas based on red. These are areas are green. So we got to focus on here. So like you said, as we do increase sales, our infrastructure doesn't collapse. We can't get product out the door. We can't keep making it and all that kind of a thing. So I guess, what is that process in evaluating it? Like, as what, like, that simplify it. Like, how do you look at it and say, okay, we got sales, we got marketing, we got manufacturing, we got, you know, fulfillment. And then looking at it and saying, okay, you know, I guess what's the easiest way to look at it and figure out how to rate it?
Yeah. So the way that I would look at it is, red is basically, we don't have any systems and the results that we get are inconsistent and only come from like sheer focus, will, determination, and manual effort.
Okay.
Right. Yellow, we're starting to see some leverage. We might have some people, we might have some processes, but they're kind of disjointed and results are more consistent than they were at red, but they're not ultra consistent yet where we can count on.
Right.
Right. And then green is where we've got people, process, and tools all working together. And we have a way of measuring the effectiveness of that system, like, you know, the speedometer in a car, like it's a feedback loop, right?
Right.
How fast are we going? So green is going to have, okay, is this system functional? How are we measuring that? So I think those are some easy ways to kind of think about those three stages and, you know, do a little bit of a self-evaluation.
And then when you're green, then like that, as you were saying, so that's when you have kind of like your OKRs or your KPIs, people have put in place, or you've put in place, or they put in place, you know, for each department or each person. Is that kind of what you're looking at?
Yeah, definitely. You want at least at that department level, if not, you know, because all of this stuff is like OKRs and KPIs and all of that is almost like Russian nesting dolls, right? Where you got a little measurement inside a bigger measurement,
right?
All the measurements lead up to the bigger one. And so you want to at least have a way of measuring, like, well, how effective is our marketing, right? Like what's the basis on which we're gauging that success? Is it, you know, number of unique visitors we're getting to our site? Is it, you know, how many leads we're getting? Like what is it for you? And you want to have that across the board at the high level. But I think when you drill into the subsystems of each of these things, you're probably going to have a measurement, you know, for each of those. For example, you know, for traffic, which, you know, if we're running paid traffic, which would be a part of marketing, it's
right.
Like, well, you know, what's our cost per click on this? Like, how much is it costing us to get a visitor? Right. So, but at minimum, you want to know, like, what does good look like at a high level for each one of these areas of the company?
That makes sense. So now, you know, we kind of got everything rated. Then what's the best way then to start implementing or kind of creating or doing the processes? Do you look for kind of the people that are in those departments on the teams that create them out? Or does it more come from like, all right, the CEO's got to go do it all? And what does that look like?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think, you know, this is one of these situations where it depends on what your setup looks like, right? If you're still a one-man band and you don't have anybody, then you're going to have to create some stuff and then bring somebody in. But ideally, you're going to have people on the team create those processes, and you're going to review them to make sure that you think you have confidence that if they follow those processes, they're going to get the results that you want. A great analogy that I use for management is this concept of a 6-inch putt, right? If you have people on your team, it's like, let them tee up the ball, let them drive it down the fairway. You know, if they hit it into the woods, let them hit it back out. And like, you don't worry about it until the ball is 6 inches from the cup and they come to you and they're like, hey, does this look good? Is this what you're talking about? Is this what we want? And you just tap the ball into the cup, right? And so if you have people on your team, let them create the processes and bring you a 6-inch putt so you could say, yeah, this looks good, right? And follow that and like institutionalize that process.
Yeah, no, that's good, because then it also helps get buy-in from them.
Yeah,
I would think.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, because you don't want a situation where you just have people on your team who are sitting there waiting for you to tell them what to do.
Right.
Right. Like that's a horrible, horrible feeling. And when I had the revolving door and all that stuff, like that's what it felt like. It felt like I was like a one person in the middle of a stadium, and all these eyes were on me waiting for me to say something. And I was just like, this is not effective. I didn't hire you guys to watch me work. Right. I need you to like be here and engage mentally. And so having them, you know, create the processes and say, well, what do we need to do, and making those suggestions and recommendations to you so you can, you know, kind of approve, modify, or reject is far more effective for a whole variety of reasons.
Awesome. As you're growing them, what are the best ways to kind of plan for that growth? And then obviously then make sure the team is executing on that growth.
Yeah. So one thing I'll say about growth. So we talked about, you know, the five pillars and the red, yellow, green.
Yep.
If you're growing quickly, it's unreasonable to think that you're going to stay at green because you got there before.
Sure.
Right? Like what is green at 0 to 1 million is not necessarily going to be green from 1 to 10 or beyond. Right?
Right.
And so it's really important to sort of calibrate that you always have to be clear on, well, what is our outcome? What is our objective we're trying to create? And then looking at, well, which of these areas of the business is the biggest bottleneck that's standing between us and achieving that outcome, right? Because it's like, let's just say for argument's sake, we want to increase sales by $250,000 in the next quarter.
Right.
Right. Right. Top line revenue. And then you look at it and you say, okay, well, what's the biggest reason why we're not already there? Is it because we're not getting enough traffic to the site, or is it because we're not converting enough of that traffic? And one of those is a marketing situation. One of them is more of a sales situation.
Right.
And if you're not accurately assessing that, then it doesn't matter what you tell people to do. If they're focused on solving the wrong problem, you're going to have a whole bunch of team members doing a whole bunch of different things that frankly may not be the thing that helps you get to that goal the fastest. So I sort of just want to like put a little asterisk
on
what we talked about with that. But in terms of getting buy-in and getting people to do, you know, what you need them to do, I think it comes down to a couple of things. But one is, what's the culture that you're deliberately creating inside of your company? Like, what are the values? Like, do you have a sense of urgency? Do you have a sense of purpose? Like, are people, you know, solution focused instead of problem focused, right? Like all these things that cause a high performance team, like part of it comes down to willingness, which is their buy into the culture. And another part of it comes down to ability, which is their skill and capability of actually getting the job done. And so I would say, you know, make sure that you're dialed in on the culture values and you're engaging as a leader who shows up as somebody who demonstrates those values, right? Like I have this framework that has four different types of bad bosses. Like a helicopter boss is somebody who's like always hovering over people, trying to make sure that they're getting things done. An absentee boss is the opposite. They're like nowhere to be seen because they're working on something that they think is cooler, or they're just like more concerned with their lifestyle. And then you've got a hypercritical person who's always convinced they could do it better. And so they're like, sort of like high conflict,
right,
with their team. And then you've got people pleaser who is unwilling to have the difficult conversations. And the way that I look at it is like, you got to be at the center of those crossroads where you have the right level of presence, not so far removed. You have the willingness to have difficult conversations, but not where you're, you know, creating conflict and antagonizing people. And so I think there's a lot of things that go into, you know, creating an environment where people want to perform at their best. But, you know, culture and how you show up as a leader are definitely among the top.
Yeah, no, that's super important. You know, it kind of leads into the next thing then. What's the best way, you know, one, so your employees are maximizing productivity throughout the day, or I guess holding them accountable to make sure, you know, they're thinking outside the box, but also critical thinking and, you know, being able to make those decisions so they're not waiting on you.
Yeah, I think the more clear people are on what the outcome is, the more they're going to find the best path for them to get there. And so it's Jack Welch's book, Winning, he said, you can never over communicate the goals of your company. Like people cannot be too clear,
right,
on what you're trying to achieve. Right. And it's gotta be simple. It can't be, you know, we're trying to do this and this and this and this and this and this. And people are like, oh my God, like my head's going to explode. Right. It's gotta be, you know, we are trying to get 1,000 customers a day, or we are trying to get like this, like what is the thing that everyone can rally behind and be centered behind? And so like, if they're clear on the goal and then they're clear on what contribution you expect from them towards that goal, I think that is like 80% of getting the most out of people. Because if you don't have those things, frankly, it doesn't matter how much people are working, or it doesn't matter how busy they are or what they're doing, because it's productivity and activity are two totally different things, right? Productivity is like, are we actually producing the result that we want to produce? Activity is like, dude, I could go take the dog for a walk and I could be busy walking the dog all day, and that's activity.
Right.
And so I think being clear on those things is fundamental to making sure that you're getting the most out of the people that are working for you.
Yeah, no, that's, and I like that. It's good to have and make sure those, you know, those people are, I guess, product, you know, being productive, you know, throughout the day, as but also maximizing it and be able to make those decisions on their own and having that super clear vision or focus, you know, for them, so they know right where that's at.
Yeah. And I'll say one other thing, man, as entrepreneurs and CEOs, like sometimes we can become real bottlenecks for the people on our teams. Right. And, you know, and I've identified there's like three bottlenecks that we can show up as. We can show up as a creative bottleneck because like we have a vision that's not well articulated yet and people don't know like what we want.
Right.
We can be, an authority bottleneck. Like we're like putting ourselves in a position where like, oh, well, I have to make the decisions for this, 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 and this, and not properly delegating authority. And then we can be a task bottleneck, which is the lowest level, but it's like, sometimes we actually need to get things done for other people to get things done. And so, you know, it's all great to say that we need to make our teams more productive, but if we're showing up as one of those three bottlenecks that's slowing things down, the team's only going to be as productive as, you know, as we're enabling them to be.
Yeah, no, that's, I can see that. Cause I mean, then it's getting stopped up obviously through the CEO, and everybody's waiting on you, to, you know, respond or fulfill that request or whatever. So
exactly.
And I guess that kind of then creates that overwhelm or that, you know, all that getting pushed back on the CEO instead of, you know, providing the, you know, your team to, you know, take that effort and to go after it and everything. So,
yeah,
I know we only got a couple minutes left. I know you do a lot of consulting and working with a lot of top CEOs and companies and things like that. What's kind of been that common theme that you found the biggest challenge with all these people are? And then kind of what is that success theme that you've kind of found with working with them?
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge is every single person that I've worked with has a big vision for what they want to create, right? They're like, I want my company to look like this. I want to make this kind of impact. I want to make this kind of income. And that's inspiring, right?
Right.
Like, it's inspiring to be with somebody who wants that. The thing that kind of slows that whole system down is you don't go from vision to execution, right? And the analogy that I use is like, if you said, hey, I've got this beautiful dream home that I want to build, like the last thing in the world you would do the next day after you had that idea is back up to your lot and start like unloading lumber and start like hammering nails into the wood,
right?
You're like, or pouring concrete or doing anything. Like, you'd never build your dream home without going from vision to blueprint to execution.
Right.
And people want to build their dream business by going from vision to like, okay, get it all done. And that there's a gap there. And it's something I call results architecture. It's like, how are you going to get the result? Like, what is the plan to be able to do that? And, you know, using some of the things that we talked about today really simplifies that. But I would say that's the biggest challenge in most of these top entrepreneurs, like hitting the levels that they want as quickly as they want. It's like, you can't skip steps, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's zero homes in the Architectural Digest magazine that didn't have a blueprint before they were built.
Right.
Zero.
That's true.
Right.
Right.
And so it's like, why are we getting so carried away with our business and like not thinking through like that same process? So it's like that high level of vision, you know, is awesome, but it can be a blessing and a curse at the same time if you just like pull the trigger and start building stuff without knowing what you're building.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, you know, and a lot of times that when we do that as entrepreneurs, like, all right, go. You know, it's like, and it's off to the races and stuff. And then like a year in, you're like, oh, wait, oh, I got to get my blueprint ready.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We're all guilty of it.
Oh, yeah.
We're all action takers, right?
That's right.
Yeah. And so like, keep that in mind. And, you know, Abraham Lincoln had a quote. He said, if you gave me 6 hours to chop down a tree, I'd spend the first five sharpening my axe. And I think that's like, you know, something to keep in mind. Like, don't go slow, but don't go so fast that you got to rework things like 5 and 10 times.
For sure. Well, cool. Where can people go and grab more information about what some of the stuff we were talking about and get more information on what you got going on?
Yeah, absolutely. So jamespfriel.com, F-R-I-E-L. That's my homepage. It's got, you know, links to resources and trainings and all that good stuff that could totally help people with, you know, kinds of things that we were talking about today.
Cool. Make sure you guys check it out. The link's down below. You can go there, check it out, see how to bulletproof your business, and make sure you're taking notes with this. Make sure you guys are really paying attention to what James is having to say here. He laid out a whole roadmap of different ideas that you can take, starting to figure out systems, figuring out where you are, you know, in your business, in each of those different areas. And then, like I said, check out some of his stuff on his site and everything as well. And I know you have a podcast, too, that's on there as well. You can check that out for tips and ideas and different things with that as well. So, again, rewind, watch, listen to this again, and really pay attention to what we're talking about. And then start taking action. Start to implement. And then, you know, Google if you're not sure about something and figure it out. And then, you know, just start applying it to your business and what you're doing so you can start to free up yourself from all those things that or in the business that other people might should be doing and get you focused back on what's driving the revenue, what you love doing the best, and then just kind of reclaim your business back to you. So just want to say thank you, James, for coming on Making Bank.
Thanks, man.
An honor to have you today and super excited to catch up and everything with you. So thank you again.
Great. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
I am Josh Felber. You were watching Making Bank. Get out and be extraordinary.
Thank you for listening to Making Bank. If you have enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. And sharing is caring. Follow Josh Felber on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram for more. You can also listen to Making Bank on Amazon Alexa, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and watch on Apple TV, Success Thinkers Network, Amazon Fire, and YouTube.